We began this evening with the Dhyana Shloka and a few of the verses from Sri Lalita Sahasranam as chanted by Sri M.P. Pandit of the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. This day, 14 March 1993, was the day of his physical departure from the earth. So I thought you would enjoy hearing his voice itself. We are working in the chapter, The Lower Triple Purusha, in what came to be titled The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. We're roughly halfway through the chapter. We'll finish it this evening. We can note that almost immediately he'll refer to sections which could be cited from the Taittiriya Upanishad, certainly, and probably from the Bhagavad Gita. So, in the Gita, you would find good citations in chapter 7, verse 3, and in chapter 10, verse 7. And we'll look at that latter when we turn this first page that we'll read now. We may seek this knowledge on two sides separately, the side of Purusha, the side of Prakriti. And we may combine the two for the perfect possession of the various relations of Purusha and Prakriti in the light of the divine. So, leaning on the side of the witness consciousness, what you could call simply the soul, or leaning on the side of the power of nature, what you could call Prakriti, you can see reality from one view or the other. Or something synthetic can be done, and you can see nature as the empowerment of the soul. You can see the soul as that reality which is abstract from all manifestation, retaining all possibilities within itself, yet unexpressed. The Gita would have us understand that the divine nature invites us to explore it from here, from the Kshara Purusha, from the moving, mutable Purusha, that we rise in consciousness and attain identity not simply with the Akshara Brahman, not simply with that which is unmoving, but with that which is transcendent. And in that transcendence, we come to know all the principles of being, the tattvas. The tat is that, the truth, indescribable. The tattvas are the principles by which that reality pours itself out into endless action. So the Purushottama, the supreme Purusha of the Gita, says, "You can come to me, and I will show you all these aspects of my own being. All of it lies within me, Madbhavam, my being." There is, says the Upanishad, a fivefold soul in man and the world, the microcosm and the macrocosm. This is the Taittiriya Upanishad. The physical soul, self or being, Purusha, Atman, is that of which we are all at first conscious, a self which seems to have hardly any existence apart from the body, and no action vital or even mental independent of it. This physical soul is present everywhere in material nature. It pervades the body, actuates obscurely its movements, and is the whole basis of its experiences. It informs all things, even that are not mentally conscious. But in man, this physical being has become vitalized and mentalized. It has received something of the law and capacities of the vital and mental being and nature. But its possession of them is derivative, superimposed, as it were, on its original nature, and exercised under subjection to the law and action of the physical existence and its instruments. So this power of consciousness is engrossed in the form that has material shape. It is this dominance of our mental and vital parts by the body and the physical nature which seems at first sight to justify the theory of the materialists that mind and life are only circumstances and results of physical force and all their operations explicable by the activities of that force in the animal body. This was true even in ancient India. There are schools of materialistic philosophy which are virtually as old as Vedanta. One could even argue that the system of Purusha and Prakriti that we know through the Sankhya is really suggesting that this world that we inhabit is fundamentally material. We don't have to wait till John Locke to discover materialism. He continues, in fact, entire subjection of the mind and the life to the body is the characteristic of an undeveloped humanity, as it is, in an even greater degree, of the infrahuman animal. Well, this is interesting. Referring to his Psychology of Social Development, we can see that the various grades of human speciation accord to the various possibilities within the evolving human. We are not stuck in materialism. We can rise above that. According to the theory of reincarnation, those who do not get beyond this stage in the earthly life cannot rise after death to the mental or higher vital worlds, but have to return from the confines of a series of physical planes to increase their development in the next earthly existence, Chandogya Upanishad. For the undeveloped physical soul is entirely dominated by material nature and its impressions, and has to work them out to a better advantage before it can rise in the scale of being. So one has to work from the base of materialism and rise in consciousness, develop the power of an evolving awareness to be able to advance in consciousness and reach these higher planes where we can see down below telescopically and incorporate all the lower being into the higher until we've attained those peaks by experience and by digested experience. We have only occasional brushes with intimations of immortality, if you will. A more developed humanity allows us to make a better and freer use of all the capacities and experiences that we derive from the vital and mental planes of being, to lean more for support upon these hidden planes, be less absorbed by the physical, and to govern and modify the original nature of the physical being by greater vital forces and powers from the desire world and greater and subtler mental forces and powers from the psychical and intellectual planes. Again, this was not revised, so when he says psychical, he's referring to the inner dimensions of the conscious being. He's not referring to the inmost realms of the soul here. So as we gain height, we can exercise those potentialities of the vital and mental planes and exert an influence, not definitive, but suggestive, which encourages the material nature to become more plastic and more inclusive. By this development, we are able to rise to higher altitudes of the intermediary existence between death and rebirth, and to make a better and more rapid use of rebirth itself for a yet higher mental and spiritual development. So we can use these statuses after death, before the next birth, to consolidate and aim ourselves at a more fulfilling development in our next incarnation. This is somewhat akin to what we saw in the early Christian theology as well. By this development, read that. But even so, in the physical being, which still determines the greater part of our waking self, we act without definite consciousness of the worlds or planes, which are the sources of our action. We are aware indeed of the life plane and mind plane of the physical being, but not of the life plane and mind plane proper, or of the superior and larger vital and mental being, which we are behind the veil of our ordinary consciousness. So we have life power and we have mentality and we can tap it, but we're still living in the superficies of our being. We're not capable of transporting ourselves to the superphysical plane of the vital nature, to prana pure. We're not capable of projecting ourselves into the higher realms of the mind, where lucidity and calm are its nature. Instead, both mind and vital are experienceable to us, accessible, and capable of our assessment only when we're seated in the body, nor are we aware of what is behind. So the superphysical planes above and what is subliminal to our view, all of this escapes us. Go back to the Life Divine and read the seven levels of ignorance. It is only at a high stage of development that we must become aware of them, and even then, ordinarily, only at the back of the action of our mentalized physical nature. We do not actually live on those planes, for if we did, we could very soon arrive at the conscious control of the body by the life power and of both by the sovereign mind. We should then be able to determine our physical and mental life to a very large extent by our will and knowledge as masters of our being and with a direct action of the mind on the life and body. This is reminiscent of what we read in the Katha Upanishad. By yoga, this power of transcending the physical self and taking possession of the higher selves may, to a greater or less degree, be acquired through a heightened and widened self-consciousness and self-mastery. So, if we did look at this citation from the Gita, from the 10th chapter and 7th verse, who knows in its right principles of being my pervading lordship and my yoga unites himself to me in untrembling yoga. So if one is capable of seeing the being behind the action, if one is capable of yoking oneself, living yukta, joined in consciousness to that being. Then one is lifted up and understands the principles, the modifications that occur within the single one that it is. This may be done on the side of Purusha by drawing back from the physical self and its preoccupation with physical nature, and through concentration of thought and will, raising oneself into the vital and then into the mental self. So here, a deliberate conscious climbing. This is accessible through tantric practice as well. As it is described in many of the texts from the 5th century on, but also one can detect this idea of ascent in the older Upanishads, in the Brihadaranyaka, in the Chandogya, in the Taittiriya. Before ever we get to the Katha Upanishad, where yoga comes into parlance, and the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, where you get an actual system that's very recognizable. By doing so, by rising, we can become the vital being and draw up the physical self into that new consciousness, so that we are only aware of the body, its nature, and its actions as secondary circumstances of the life soul, which we now are, used by it for its relations with the material world. So this becomes your new station of being. You're no longer engrossed in the physical. Now you are placed primarily in the vital world, and you are extended below into the body. More to come. A certain remoteness from physical being, and then a superiority to it. A vivid sense of the body being a mere instrument or shell and easily detachable. An extraordinary affectivity of our desires on our physical being and life environment. A great sense of power and ease in manipulating and directing the vital energy of which we now become vividly conscious, for its action is felt by us concretely, subtly physical in relation to the body, sensible in a sort of subtle density as an energy used by the mind. An awareness of the life plane in us above the physical, and knowledge and contact with the beings of the desire world, a coming into action of new powers, what are usually called occult powers or siddhis, a close sense of and sympathy with the life soul in the world, and a knowledge or sensation of the emotions, desires, vital impulses of others. These are some of the signs of this new consciousness gained by yoga. So you can see here, too, that its signature is power, that this is power able to express itself not only within the realm of prana, within the realm of the vital planes in its many dimensions, but extendable, persuasive into the body. One can do things in the body with vital force that one cannot do while in the body primarily and trying to draw down the vital force. But when one gains some height, one can send, like lightning, like a vajra, a jolt of energy that forces the material being to accept the force from above. And this is simply stepping out of the physical into the vital. Just the first step has been taken. So he continues, but all this belongs to the inferior grades of spiritual experience, and indeed is hardly more spiritual than the physical existence. We have in the same way to go yet higher and raise ourselves into the mental self. So in a way, we're climbing above the material being, and so we're in supraphysical levels now. It is above the level of the body, but this is not the source of all being. This is not our spiritual nature. We have to keep climbing. So we climb up to the mental self. By doing so, we can become the mental self and draw up the physical and vital being into it, so that life and body and their operations become to us minor circumstances of our being, used by the mind-soul, which we now are, for the execution of its lower purposes that belong to the material existence. Here, too, we acquire at first a certain remoteness from the life and the body, and our real life seems to be on quite another plane than material man's, in contact with a subtler existence, a greater light of knowledge than the terrestrial, a far rarer and yet more sovereign energy. We are in touch, in fact, with the mental plane. Aware of the mental worlds, can be in communication with its beings and powers. From that plane, we behold the desire world and the material existence as if below us, udasinata, seated above, things that we can cast away from us if we will, and in fact easily reject when we relinquish the body so as to dwell in the mental or psychical heavens, videya mukti, when we cast off the body and live free, deliberately free, above. But we can also, instead of being thus remote and detached, become rather superior to the life and body and the vital and material planes, and act upon them with mastery from our new height of being. It doesn't simply have to be rejection. It can be directive. We can seat ourselves above in the plane of the mind and command the life energies. Ask the body to obey the vitality pouring into it at the mental behest. Another sort of dynamis than physical or vital energy. Something that we may call pure mind power and soul force, which the developed human being uses indeed, but derivatively and imperfectly, but which we can now use freely and with knowledge, becomes the ordinary process of our action. While desire force and physical action fall into a secondary place and are only used with this new energy behind them and as its occasional channels. It seems to me that I skipped a page. No? Bill contradicts me. But at least he doesn't mock me. So again, when he uses terms like mind power and soul force, he's referring to the conscious being within, what he might later call the subliminal inner mind, etc. But he does not mean to suggest the soul force from the psychic being here. This is untapped, undiscovered, in this unrevised essay that we're working through here. Remember, when he wrote this, he never came back to revise this particular essay. So one can station oneself above and live primarily from there and make that the new level of water in the being. One doesn't come down below. One sits above and directs. I think that there's some clarification needed here. Sri Aurobindo is not suggesting that anybody be content with rising to one of these superphysical planes and staying there. It is an achievement to gain that. One of the dangers of stationing oneself above and being primarily there and not really integrated with the physical, but sort of looking at it as a distant shell of part of our external being only, diminishing its nature, is that one can think that one has achieved a kind of mastery and equality, which may exist there, but does not really exist in the body. And I have seen yogins again and again fail to note this, and then be surprised at the sudden eruption of disease or disability or imbalance, etc., and not be capable of dealing with it because they were living high above in a mental perfection that they did not wish to leave in order to deal with the inconveniences of physical life. So we, as integral yogins, have to remain yoked to every part of our being. We insist on integration, do we not? Let's continue here. We are in touch and sympathy also with the mind in cosmos, conscious of it, aware of the intentions, directions, thought forces, struggle of subtle powers behind all happenings, which the ordinary man is ignorant of or can only obscurely infer from the physical happening, but which we can now see and feel directly before there is any physical sign or even vital intimation of their working. So just as we may seat ourselves in the vital plane and be open to the commerce of universal vitality, we can here dwell in the cosmic mind and see what is forging itself towards material expression upon the earth from universal origination. We acquire too the knowledge and sense of the mind action of other beings, whether on the physical plane or on those above it, and the higher capacities of the mental being, occult powers or cities, but of a much rarer or subtler kind than those proper to the vital plane, naturally awaken our consciousness. He doesn't need to enumerate them and say what one can do. He's busy noting these empowerments and experiments in the conditioning and application of them in his record of yoga. He's treating that journal as an area in which he can record his experiments. Not all of them, but those which take the main focus. All these things naturally awake in our consciousness. All these, however, are circumstances of the lower triple world of our being, the Trilokya of the ancient sages. Living on these, we are, whatever the enlargement of our powers and our consciousness, still living within the limits of the cosmic gods, and subject, though with a much subtler, easier, and modified subjection, to the reign of Prakriti over Purusha. To achieve real freedom and mastery, we have to ascend to a yet higher level of the many-plateaued mountain of our being. So, he has traced so far this scale of ascent from engrossment in the body to the consciousness escaping to the vital plane and becoming universal, thence to the mental plane and working through an enlarged vital being in a plasticized and energized physical being. The inadequacy of that becomes plain because, called above, we see raining down upon us these lightnings from a world of truth, the radiant world of the everlasting truth. That higher plane is Vijnana. So if the Taittiriya ranges us upwards from matter, annam, food, to prana, life power, to manas, the mind, to Vijnana, the vast knowledge, which is the supramental world, the mahas, still that too comes from a greater power of being, which is ananda, bliss. This is the fivefold scale that we meet in the Taittiriya Upanishad. But we should note that an even earlier Upanishad scaled them differently. We've mentioned it before. There were five there as well, a kind of cosmology. At the base, here, anna, food, then prana, then life as manas, then vach, the great power of the word, the creative word. So what we would call vijnana is in Brihadaranyaka's cosmology, vach, the truth power, speaking out the words, speaking out the words which become the worlds and the creatures in them. Beyond vach is avyakrita, the uncreated, that which is beyond all expressive power. And that's almost at the very beginning of the Brihadaranyaka, the first chapter, the first section of the first chapter, the second verse. So 112, if you want to look that up. So into Vijnana is where we go next, and we enter the ladder of self-transcendence. Next week, chapter 21, we take up in the Yoga of Integral Knowledge. I think the limits of the self of mind might be a good place for us to begin in Savitri this evening. So we can look at book 2, the book of the Traveler of the Worlds, canto 13 in the self of mind, and we'll begin towards the bottom of page 286. This great spectator and creator mind was only some half-seeing's delegate, a veil that hung between the soul and light, an idol, not the living body of God. Even the still spirit that looks upon its works was some pale front of the unknowable. A shadow seemed the wide and witness self, its liberation and immobile calm, a void recoil of being from time-made things, not the self-vision of eternity. Deep peace was there, but not the nameless force. Our sweet and mighty mother was not there, who gathers to her bosom her children's lives, her clasp that takes the world into her arms in the fathomless rapture of the infinite, the bliss that is creation's splendid grain, or the white passion of God ecstasy that laughs in the blaze of the boundless heart of love. A greater spirit than the self of mind must answer to the questioning of his soul. For here was no firm clue and no sure road, high climbing pathways seized in the unknown. An artist's sight constructed the beyond in contrary patterns and conflicting hues. A part experience fragmented the whole. He looked above, but all was blank and still. A sapphire firmament of abstract thought escaped into a formless vacancy. He looked below, but all was dark and mute. A noise was heard between of thought and prayer, a strife, a labor without end or pause. A vain and ignorant seeking raised its voice, a rumor and a movement and a call, a foaming mass, a cry innumerable, rolled ever upon the ocean surge of life along the coasts of mortal ignorance. On its unstable and enormous breast, beings and forces, forms, ideas like waves, jostled for figure and supremacy, and rose and sank and rose again in time. And at the bottom of the sleepless stir, a nothingness, parent of the struggling worlds, a huge creator death, a mystic void, forever sustaining the irrational cry, forever excluding the supernal word, motionless, refusing question and response, reposed beneath the voices and the march, the dim inconscience, dumb incertitude. Two firmaments of darkness and of light opposed their limits to the spirit's walk. It moved, veiled in from self's infinity, in a world of beings and momentary events where all must die to live and live to die. Immortal by renewed mortality, it wandered in the spiral of its acts, or ran around the cycles of its thought, yet was no more than its original self, and knew no more than when it first began. To be was a prison, extinction the escape. We shall see about that. Namaste, Jai Ma.